Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of The Referee's a Tanker. Joined tonight by Michael and by Martin, we're going to go through the results north and south of the border. Plenty of talking points this week with VAR, as usual, at the forefront of all that. Discussions about managerial merry-go-round, Paul Pogba's four-year suspension by FIFA, and a trip around Europe to get the results on the continent. But I'll let Michael take you through the results to start us off.
Thanks, Sean. So we're going back as far as the 19th of February, where we've seen Everton and Palace draw 1-1 in the Monday night football. The Tuesday night then seen Man City beat Brentford 1-0 at the Etihad. Liverpool then came from behind to beat Luton 4-1 at Anfield on the Wednesday. On the Saturday down south, we had Premier League action with Aston Villa beating Nottingham Forest 4-2. Brighton and Everton drew one apiece at the Amex. Crystal Palace were 3-0 winners against Burnley. Fulham were 2-1 winners after a very late goal against Man United at Old Trafford. Man City ran out 1-0 winners against Bournemouth at the Vitality Stadium. And we've seen Arsenal win 4-1 at the Emirates against Newcastle. The Sunday then seen Wolves beat Sheffield United 1-0 at home. And on the Monday, we had West Ham beating Brentford 4-2 with three goals from Jared Bowen. In the Scottish Premiership, we go back to the Saturday, where we had Hibs beating Dundee 2-1 at Easter Road. Kilmarnock were 2-0 winners against Aberdeen at Rugby Park. Rangers ran out 5-0 winners at home to Hearts. Ross County were 3-2 winners up in Dingwall against Livingston. And in the Battle of the Saints, St Mirren beat St Johnstone 2-0. On the Sunday, we've seen Celtic beat Motherwell 3-1 at Fir Park. And then we had some midweek games as well, where Ross County and St Mirren drew one apiece on the Tuesday night. And on the Wednesday night, we had the rest of the fixtures, which seen St Johnstone beat Aberdeen 2-0 up at Pittodrie. Celtic ran out very comfortable 7-1 winners against Dundee at Celtic Park. In Edinburgh Derby, we had Hearts and Hibs draw one apiece with a very contentious penalty, which we'll talk about later on. Rangers came from behind to beat Kilmarnock 2-1 at Rugby Park. And Motherwell also came from behind to beat Livingston 3-1 at the Spaghetti Hut. While we're on the fixture as well, we'll just quickly run through the FA Cup fifth round scores over the last week. On the Monday night, we've seen Coventry beat Maidstone 5-0. Tuesday, seen Leicester, Championship side Leicester, knock out Premiership Bournemouth 1-0 away from home. Newcastle had to rely on penalties to get past Blackburn Rovers after a 1-1 draw. And Man City ran out comfortable 6-2 victories over Luton, with Haaland scoring five of those goals. The Wednesday seen Chelsea leave it very late to beat Leeds 3-2 at Stamford Bridge. Another one leaving it late was Man United, who beat Nottingham Forest away from home 1-0. Wolves were 1-0 winners against Brighton, and Liverpool beat Championship side Southampton 3-0 at Anfield. I think that's it. That was quite a few scores to get through there, wasn't
quite
it?
Quite a few, mate. Aye. That's what happens when we miss a week, eh?
Exactly. So, some great results. We won't dwell on them too much because the big talking points, we'll catch them within the big talking points section.
Yeah.
Right. As always, guys, I've got a wee quiz for you here. Four questions. If you can either remember your answers or write them down, that'd be grand. And we'll just go through them. So, first question is, who scored the most Premier League goals for West Ham? Is it Carlton Cole, Paolo Di Canio, Mark Noble, or Mikel Antonio? Second question is, how many players did Nottingham Forest sign last season? Was it 22, 27, 32, or 37? How many players have scored over 150 goals in the Premier League? Is it 8, 9, 10, or 11? And the final question is, who did Spain beat in the final of the European Championships in 2008? Choices are Russia, Italy, Netherlands or Germany? Quite happy with them, boys?
Yeah.
Right. So, Shan, we'll come to you first. Who scored the most Premier League goals for West Ham? Is it Carlton Cole, De Canio, Noble or Antonio?
Antonio.
That's correct, mate. Marty, how many players did Forrest sign last season? 22, 27, 32 or 37?
It has to be 22 because anything higher than that is just ridiculous.
32, mate.
What? What?
32 Wait. Players they signed last season.
That's a joke.
Shan, how many players have scored over 150 goals in the Premier League? Oh. 8, 9, 10 or 11?
I'll go 9, Michael.
The answer is 10. What did you go for, Marty?
I said 9.
Did you? 10 players? There's one that I thought of for the 11. Michael Owen scored 150. But the question was over 150, so I was thinking maybe catching you boys out with that. But
did it name the players by any chance?
Mate, this just told your horses.
I've jumped the gun.
You can almost see where this week's brain teaser is going to be coming in, can't you?
Yes.
And who did Spain beat in the final of the European Championships in 2008? Russia, Italy, Netherlands or Germany? Marty?
Germany.
Well done, mate. I think when I did that, I picked the Netherlands.
That was the World Cup.
Was that the World Cup?
Fernando Torres scored a goal, mate. Yeah,
Fernando Torres out.
Happy days. Right, and the brain teaser, which as always, you boys just have we think about between now and the end of the show, and we'll come back to it. So the 10 top scorers with over 150 goals each in the Premier League, I want you boys to name them. So later on when I come back to you, I'll just go from one to the other. We'll get the 10 rattled out, no doubt. You boys will have them all sorted, I'm sure. Right, we'll move on to the big talking points of the week. The first one I'll get out of the way, because I see you boys are still seething after yesterday, and to be fair, quite rightly so, is the VAR in Scotland. First one we'll talk about, to get out of the way, will be the game between Hearts and Hibs. Hibs winning 1-0. Hearts are up the other end in the box, and they get a penalty for, I'm still not quite sure what it was, the contact was absolutely minimal. Enough to send the boy down, I very much doubt that in the first place. But the fact we've got VAR should be able to spot this and tell him to switch it around now. I didn't see the game. Did the referee give it initially, or was it a yes. Go to the VAR? So he's given it initially, and then VAR have asked him to check it again, haven't they?
Yes.
So that makes me think that VAR think it's not a penalty.
Yes.
And Clancy's still stuck with his original decision of penalty. Was he looking at a different screen or a different free play to what we were, boys? Or what did you boys make it?
The fact that he gave the penalty in the first place is laughable.
Concerning,
yep. And then you think when he gets sent to the screen, he's going to realise his mistake. And obviously VAR, whoever it was in it, has told them that they don't think that's a penalty and you should have a look at it. And the fact that he looks at it again on the TV and still gives it is, try to find the correct word for this. It's just, totally embarrassing. And then you watch it again on TV, it's just, I don't understand that at all. It's not a penalty, it's a dive. He goes down like he's been shot. And to be fair, Clancy, given that penalty, just summed up his performance the whole night. He gave Hibs absolutely nothing, nothing.
The thing about it is, we spoke about this the other week when we talked about VAR, whether we'd get rid of it, and we said we would keep VAR if there was changes to it, and it was literally for clear and obvious mistakes. Now, this is one where I think VAR's actually picked it up correctly and told Clancy, we don't think that's a penalty. And I still don't understand what he sees that nobody else is seeing. Sharon, what was your take on it?
I think he has rushed to his whistle. He was desperate to give that penalty, mate. You could see it. The contact is a relatively heavy touch from Wilfish and Vargas. He's literally stood and his heel has grazed him and he's bumped him with his hip. Now, that wouldn't even knock over me, who's half, kind of like 10 stone wet, soaking wet. Never mind a professional football player. But honestly, you could see that it was 17,000, 18,000, 19,000 folk and the officials and the coaching staff, maybe thought it was a penalty. It's almost like I didn't want to make myself look like an arse here, so I'm just going to stick to my original decision. Pure stubbornness. And in all fairness, if, like we said about VAR, this isn't a VAR. The implementation of VAR was correct. It alerted him to a potential mistake. Obviously thinking, that's not a penalty, mate. You might well have a look at this. It's the officiating. The level of incompetence from Clancy all night was horrendous. And if you're given that for a penalty, then we've said it a million times that like the game's gone if you're given penalties for that. But that's an absolute rotter. You wouldn't give an under-7s game.
Nah.
You wouldn't give it. There's almost literally no contact. And the boy goes down, first of all, mouth open, throwing out as if he's in agony. And he's like holding his knee when there's no contact with his knee whatsoever. It's embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing.
Another quick one. I said that wasn't VAR4, but this one possible it was. It was Ross County against St Mirren on the Tuesday night, where St Mirren are getting beat 1-0. They're pushing for an equaliser towards the end of the first half. The ball gets thrown into the box. And again, it's one of these ones where there's a handball in the box and no penalty is given. Now, I'm all for hands being in slightly unnatural positions, the ball hitting and not being a penalty. But this one, his hand was way above his head when he touches it.
Yep.
Have you guys seen it and what was your take on it?
I did see it. And the fact is, how you can't give that in real time is worrying from an official's point of view, that his hand is above his head and he flicks it away. The whole stadium can see it. The only person that can see it is the referee. And they look at it, and again, they don't give it. You have to ask, what are they looking at? He flicks the ball away with his hand. There's no doubt, there's no debate. Everybody can see it. And they don't give it. You just have to know. You have to ask, what are they seeing?
It's almost to the fact that if someone was to turn around and tell you that there's a massive thing going on in Scotland with regards to throwing games and referees being given bungs to throw games or not do certain things. That is for some of these decisions, this is the only one that would actually make sense to you. As horrific as it would be, it's really the only one that you could understand then why they made the decision, because any other way of looking at it, you're just absolutely baffled, aren't you, Sham?
Mate, honestly, if you were to suggest to me that referees were in on some sort of match-fixing allegations regarding penalties given or cards given or whatever, you could believe it, based on the sheer stupidity and the absolute nonsense of the decision-making. The inconsistencies is wild, right? But the one against... Well, I thought the Hibs one was ridiculously soft, of course, but the Ross County and St Mirren one, I actually think he's getting fouled in the first place. He's getting, like, dragged towards the ground and, yeah, he's stumbling down, but if anything, the fact that he's not in the way of the defending player means that he's the only standalone player that's standing up at that point. There's no, it could be in somebody else's hand. It couldn't be like he was nudged into the ball. No. The St Mirren boy's going to the deck. The only hand up there is a Ross County hand. Like, yeah. If it's not a foul, which it could be contentious anyway, what the hell's your hand up there?
Yeah, that's crazy. Honestly, isn't
you
it?
Could genuinely believe that if it came out in years to come that, they were taking bungs for giving it or not giving it penalties, you could believe it based on this.
Absolutely.
It's not even that far-fetched.
No, certainly not. Right, well, we'll move on from that. We're going to have a quick look at managerial merry-go-round. Now, we've not had anyone lose their job since Derek Adams at Ross County, wasn't it? And down south, Crystal Palace, Roy Hodgson. But there's a couple of managers that might be looking a bit shaky just now. We talked about Warnock coming up to Scotland being good for the Scottish game, but having played these, what is it, the first six games at Aberdeen, quite a few of them have been at home and still waiting on a win. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Aberdeen fans really, really worried because they're getting pulled right down towards this relegation, possible relegation battle.
Yep.
For a team like Aberdeen, who finished third last season, had group stage European football this season, it is a bit of a calamity there just now, isn't it?
Mate, it's ridiculous. Now, honestly, it's really ridiculous. I said to Marty, is it possible to sack an interim coach? Because in all fairness, you've got to start thinking about, he's came in, it's almost for a comedy reasons, because they've just got worse, much.
Yeah. Supposedly, Peter Leaven was offered the gig to the end of the season, and he said no. So that's why they went for Warnock. So you've got to think that if Warnock did get his jotters after six or seven games, and Peter Leaven doesn't want it for the rest of the season, are they going to have to get somebody else in? Or?
Who wants that role now? You're on a no-win basis. So you're basically either you're going to go down or you're going to finish a season in the bottom six with the fans still unhappy. So,
yeah. And what was it you were saying earlier on? Sorry, Marty, 2 seconds. What were you saying earlier on, Shan, about the 4 days off or something?
Yeah, it was widely rumoured by a lot of the reliable source that is Twitter. Stated that Neil Warnock, Elon, that Neil Warnock was actually had given the players 4 days off after the Hibs and Aberdeen game the week previous. There were pictures of Majowski at Edinburgh Airport on his way to either Tenerife or Barcelona, and Warnock was down in Cornwall for 4 days in the lead up to the Killie game, which they then got beat. And then they went and played St Johnstone during the week at home, thinking, all right, we need to bounce back. And go beat again, and no scoring goals either. And they've got like the best striker in the country, and still no scoring goals.
It's worrying, isn't it?
It would be if I'm an Aberdeen fan, because like you said, like you're going to lose Majowski in the summer. Like Duke's not the same player, and you look around, and you think, okay, well, if we lose him, and we lose maybe Kelleher in goals, for instance, they're toiling.
Yeah, they are. Marty, what's your take on it, mate?
I actually thought when Aberdeen got Warnock in that he would he'd make them harder to beat, more solid. They concede less goals than they have been, and they still have a threat going forward, but it just hasn't happened. They're so poor. They don't look like keeping clean sheets. They can't score enough goals, and they just don't look like a proper team. And if that's true about the four-day break between games, that's so unprofessional, and it just makes Aberdeen a laughingstock even more than they have been this season because they've been so poor.
Yeah, I totally agree, mate. It's not getting easier for them either because this weekend they're away to St Mirren, which isn't the easiest of places to go to.
Honestly, they must be. Like, I think Ross County play Hibs twice on the trot in the league, which if Hibs play like they have done the last couple of games, Ross County should really get beat twice, or Hibs should take at least four. Then that might be Aberdeen saving grace for a little bit to kind of keep Ross County off their back because they're not that far behind, really. And if you go into that bottom six on a poor run, I mean, we've been there, Hibs fans, Marty. We finished seventh that season and still went down. Yeah. You didn't get what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Tricky one.
It is a tricky one. The other one I was wanting to have a look at was Livingston with Martindale in charge. Now, we spoke about this off-air before we came on, and the question is, if he did go, who would take the job? Is there anyone able to keep Livingston up? I would very much doubt it just now with the current predicament they're in. They are 11 points behind St Johnstone.
Yeah.
And they've only managed to get 16 points within the first 28 games. You're then looking at them getting at least that again over the next 10 games.
Yeah.
It's not looking great for them. It's St Johnstone versus Livingston this weekend up at Mederma Park.
Yeah.
I think a win for them, and the only hope they've got is getting to the playoffs, but even again just now behind Ross County, they're 7 points behind that space just now, and they've played a game more than Ross County. So
what's the goal difference like, Mike? Good.
So Livingston are -29, Ross County are -22.
It's arguably a point maybe. I did see Livingston making up 7 goals on them, do you?
Nah, I don't mind. They got that one, it was against St Mirren.
Yeah.
Last week on the Saturday, I think it was. They got that unlikely. I mean, when you looked at the stats as well, I think St Mirren were by far the better team, and especially with the form they've been in, you would almost have expected them. If they hadn't picked up those 3 points, that would have been five losses on the bounce, at least five losses on the bounce. I'm just looking at current form.
Yeah.
10 points behind already. I mean, even 7 points behind, and then 11 points behind 10th place here. It's a big really is a worry. Do you reckon there is anyone that could come in and do anything, or do you think that's them almost resigning themselves to relegation?
Honestly, mate, if you ask me, I think that the reason Martindale's in there is because I know he's on a rolling contract short-term wise, and he's just continually letting it roll over. He'll be on a relatively modest wage. The club are probably looking at best-case scenario, let's just keep somebody that's familiar with the players, who probably, if Emery's going to get the best out of his players now, I can't imagine a brand-new face who knows nothing about the squad, takes a couple of games to get going, and then you're left with, what, single-digit games left? I think it's a case of, you know what, captain stays around face with his sinking ship. He's just kicking about because I think he knows that he's the only man they can really get in. The club know, who are you going to get in? Who are you going to in? We said off air, if you bring in like a young guy like Rhys McCabe, or you bring in somebody like McPake, something for Dunfermline, they know they're going back down. And then you're going to end up an absolutely decimated squad in the summer because all they do is, like Ross County, they live off short-term deals. Summer's going to come round. Anybody of any real value, the boy Penrice at full-back, maybe Obelai at centre-half, and you might think, you know, maybe Shinny can do a job, and then you're left with an absolutely threadbare squad. I don't think Emery really wants that job. But I think Livingston go down, they're going to be like Hamilton. They may drift again to League One, potentially.
Yeah. Right, we'll have a quick move on from that, and we'll get Marty's feeding on the next bit, which is Fernandez, whether we think he is fit to be Man United captain. Comparing him to previous Man United captains, Roy Keane, Robson, Bruce... He's nowhere near that mould, is he? Marty, what's your take on him being captain? Do you think he should be captain to start with? And two, if he wasn't captain, who would you have in as captain?
In my opinion, Bruno Fernandes shouldn't be my United captain. Not for me. He'd be in my team every week. And I know people love to hate him, but he is still a good player. But in my opinion, he shouldn't be captain. I don't think he's captain material. But to say who should be captain is difficult to say. You'd have to go for 1 year or more experienced players like Varane or Casemiro, possibly. They took off Harry Maguire, but I still think Harry Maguire would be a better captain than Bruno Fernandes. So one of those.
I would agree with that.
I don't think Bruno Fernandes should be my captain, but he will be till the foreseeable. As long as Ten Hag's there, he will be captain.
Sam.
You know my feelings on this. I think Fernandes is a shambolic captain for United. Look at the standards that Man United set themselves. This is Man United. We're not talking about Wycombe Wanderers, need disrespect, but this is Man United. Brian Robson, Roy Keane, Gary Neville, Eric Cantona. Captains with, they not even just the way they played, they conducted themselves as if they were representing the club at elite level, on and off the park, everything. Bruno Fernandes, I'm sorry, but yes, he is a above average player, but he's nowhere near elite, nowhere near that level that I would class as like anybody. You wouldn't even get near the City team, right? And the way he conducts himself on the park with his consistent play acting, theatrics, diving, constantly the referee, constantly moaning. You can see other players hate him. He's not a captain of Man United. I'd have Harry Maguire over him every single day of the week. Every single day. The only problem with Maguire is he's not always in the team. I would have said Luke Shaw also. Never fit. And otherwise, other than that, like Marty says, there's not a lot of players that you look at that team and think, he's a stalwart, he's there every week, he plays in and out, he's always a 7 out of 10. There's no Gary Neville in that team. I would argue that Varane and Casemiro, yeah, but Casemiro's probably past his better years and might move on in the summer, depending on the takeover scenario. Varane's never in the team. If you keep Lisandro Martinez fit, I would put him as my captain.
He's
a leader. You can tell. He's vocal, he organises well, he's fierce, he can get the fans on side, he can actually cares about the badge. Bruno's just a passenger sometimes. He if everyone doesn't go his way, he's an absolute waste of jersey sometimes. Like Rashford, there's too many folk that are nice players when it's going right, but there's no muck and nettles players in that team. There's no Roy Keane in that team. too many frauds. Like I said, I have Lissandro. It's Lissandro, right? Lissandro Martinez, is it?
Martinez.
I'd have Martinez if when he gets back fit and he stays fit, and I'd have like Shaw and Maguire, like stalwarts, ken the club, know what it means to represent the badge. But taking it off Maguire was, I thought, was a harsh deal annoying. So that's my take, mate.
The last thing I just want to mention rather than talk about is Paul Pogba has been banned today for 4 years from football for doping offences. He was randomly tested after Juve's first game of the season on the 20th of August. A positive test was confirmed by Italy's National Anti-Doping Tribunal and a second sample in October, and the anti-doping prosecutor offers requested a 4-year suspension. Now, I should say that Pogba's come out and said that he's upset by this and shocked by it, and he is going to take it to the sport of arbitration. What was it called? CAS.
Yeah.
So he is going to fight it, and he says that once he's free of legal restrictions, the full story will become clear. But it's a sad fall from grace from looking at one of the best players in the world.
Yep.
6 or 7 years ago.
Yep.
It really has went quite sadly downhill. But
I felt when United, sorry, mate, when United took him back to Juve, I thought they were going to get an absolute baller. I thought, and you could see that the potential was there. It was just his work ethic. And I don't know if it was the entourage he had around them, but he was too easily distracted. And it shows that Man United were happy enough to let him go when his contract went up. Just a sad, yeah. Like you said, it's a sad state that somebody that talented just has went to the Wolves there.
Right, boys. We'll have a quick look around Europe just now. Shan, I'll come to you first with regards to La Liga. What's been happening this week, mate?
La Liga match day 26 started on Friday night with Villarreal picking up a much-needed 3-1 win away to a disappointing Real Sociedad. And Barcelona picked up a 4-0 win at home to Getafe, which is a great result for them. Almeria still winless, but picked up a credible and pretty decent 2-2 draw at home to Atletico Madrid. Cardiff picked up a 90-plus-10 equaliser against Celta Vigo at home to keep their hopes of survival hanging by a thread, but they really need to start picking up some wins. Betis, great win for Betis at home with Athletic Club, who lost Nico Williams to 2 yellow cards. One for applauding the referee after getting originally booked. Betis ran out 3-1 winners. And Real Madrid defeated Sevilla in the late game on Sunday night, 1-0 with a Luka Modric cracker. Monday night seen Girona pick up a win to keep close to Real Madrid with a 3-0 home win against Vallecano. In the standings, we have Real Madrid 6 points clear of Girona, who are in turn 2 points clear of Barcelona in third. Atletico Madrid are 5 points further back of Barcelona in the fourth position for Champions League. Down the bottom, Almeria, like we said, still winless. 26 games, 9 points and 17 defeats. Not great. But they're actually, it's weird to think, they're actually quite decent. They're just not picking up the wins. Granada sitting second bottom on 14. Cardiff on 18. Celta Vigo 21 and Mallorca 24, hovering around that drop zone. So that was Copa del Rey action, second leg this week. It was second leg at the Reale Arena. Real Sociedad and Mallorca was 1-1, and Mallorca advanced to the final on a 5-4 penalty shootout victory. Tonight is Athletic Club against Atletico Madrid at San Mamés. Athletic Club won 1-0 away at the Civitas Metropolitano a couple of weeks back. So they've got the 1-0 advantage and home advantage in the second leg. So I'd imagine their home form is pretty strong. So they should, in theory, get through to Copa del Rey final, which will be early April against Mallorca.
Happy days. Marty, what's been happening in Serie A?
The standout results from the latest round, Juventus kept their title hopes alive with a 95th-minute winner against Frosinone in a 3-2 victory. Much-changed Inter Milan recorded a 4-0 win away to Lecce. AC Milan and Atalanta shared the spoils at San Siro in a 1-1 draw. Roma continued their good form with a 3-2 win against Torino. I think it was a hat-trick by Dybala, if I'm right. And there was two midweek matches this week. Napoli recorded a 6-1 away win against Sassuolo, and Inter Milan recorded another 4-0 win against Atalanta in their game in hand. The standings at the moment, Inter are now 12 points clear, with 12 games to go, with Juventus in second. And the bottom three are Sassuolo, Cagliari, and still the Salernitana are rock bottom, and they are good as gone. So, yeah, that's your latest from Serie A.
It's quite close, though, from maybe 13th down to 19th. There's only, what, 5 points in it?
Yeah, 13th is Empoli are 25, and bottom are Salernitana on 13. So,
yeah, but even between Empoli and Cagliari,
yeah,
there's 5 points between them. So,
close tight, yeah,
some battle there.
Yeah, yep. It's quite tight, yeah.
And Sean, what about the Bundesliga?
Bundesliga, mate, was match day 23 started on Friday night with league leaders Bayer Leverkusen eking out a 2-1 home win against Mainz. Much needed, I think, because big game against Bayern the week before, you can sometimes, the adrenaline levels come down, easier on paper, easier game at home, but they still managed to get a 2-1 victory. Our old friend Union Berlin, they got a 2-2 draw at home at Heidenheim. München Gladbach racked up 5 against Bochum in a 5-2 win. Bayern defeated Leipzig in a much-needed win for them, with Harry Kane getting a late winner for that one to finish 2-1. Dortmund took the lead 2-1 at home in Hoffenheim to succumb to a 3-2 home defeat, which is just typical of Dortmund. And the standings at the minute, Leverkusen are 8 clear of Bayern with 11 games to go. Third place is Stuttgart, fourth place Dortmund, and down the bottom, Darmstadt and Mainz, still only on 2 victories on 13 points and 15 points respectively. And in the relegation playoff place is Cologne on 17. There's a bit of a gap up to Bochum and Union Berlin. Oh, wait, hold on. Bochum, Union Berlin, Wolfsburg and Mönchengladbach are all on the same points, all on 25 points. So, I mean, lucky that there's an 8-point cushion for them above Cologne, and who are looking like the playoff place might be their best bet to stay out of trouble, because it looks like there's a big enough gap that the teams above them will probably fancy their chances to stay out of trouble.
Yeah, I would think so, mate.
Yeah.
We will have a quick look ahead to the scores coming up. The scores coming up this week, that'd be good if I could give you them, eh? Be at the bookie straight away. We'll have a look at the games coming up this week. On the Saturday, in the Premier League, we have Brentford at home to Chelsea. West Ham travel to Liverpool to play against Everton at Goodison. Fulham are at home to Brighton. Wolves travel up north to play Newcastle. We have Nottingham at home to Liverpool. Spurs are at home to Palace. And the evening kickoff, the 5:30 kickoff, sees Luton at home to Aston Villa. On the Sunday, we have Burnley at home to Bournemouth. And we have the Manchester Derby kicking off at 3:30 on the Sunday. Man City at home. Monday night football sees Sheffield United at home to Arsenal. In Scotland, on the Saturday, we have Dundee are at home to Kilmarnock. Ross County travel to the capital to play Hibs at Easter Road. Rangers are at home to Motherwell. St Johnstone are at home to Livingston. And Aberdeen travel to St Mirren. On the Sunday, we have Hearts at home to Celtic with a 12 o'clock kickoff. Brain teaser, boys. Let's get through these top 10 goal scorers. Now, I'll go one at a time and you can knock them, knock them off as we go. Marty, you can go first. Who's your first choice?
Alan Shearer.
Correct. Sian?
Wayne Rooney.
Correct. Marty?
Jermaine Defoe.
Correct. Sian?
Andy Cole.
Correct. Marty?
Robbie Fowler.
Correct. Sian?
Harry Kane.
Yep, it's number two, mate. Marty?
Ian Wright?
No. Sian?
Frank Lampard?
Frank Lampard is one. Back to you, Marty.
No, I'm toiling.
I was going to say Stephen Gerrard, but it's not Stephen Gerrard, is it?
Another central midfielder, if that gives you a wee hand.
Paul Scholes?
Nah, the other one. Out of that three. Sian?
Robbie Keane?
Nope. We'll give you another couple of chances each, boys, and I'll go through the top 10. Marty?
Dion Dublin?
No.
Oofed. Thierry Henry?
Thierry Henry is one.
I didn't miss that.
Robin van Persie?
No, mate, he's number 14. He's not far off. He was only 12 goals behind. 18 goals behind Robbie Fowler in ninth place. And 10th place was Mohamed Salah. Frank Lampard, and the other one you just didn't get was Sergio Aguero.
Oh, Christ, Aguero, Christ.
So, very, very good effort, lads. Anyway, and yeah, next week I'll go 10 to 20. I'm joking.
Top goal scorers in the Scottish League One go.
With an L in their second name. Looking at Betting Corner this week, boys. We didn't have a chat with about this off air, so this is just going to be going for it. Marty, who's your two teams this week?
Oh, I've never had a chance to think.
I'll go, Mike, while Marty looks.
Go for it.
I'll take Aston Villa away to Luton.
Yep.
And I'll take Hibs at home in Ross County.
Nice. Marty, you want another wee chance to look, or?
Hold on, give us a second. I'll take Tottenham at home to Crystal Palace. And I'll take... Oh, God. I'll take Leeds away to Huddersfield.
Leeds away to Huddersfield. And I think I'm going to go Liverpool away to Forest, even though they've got a bit of an injury crisis. The young boys they brought in have been doing some amazing things. And I will take... I was going to say a Villa before realising you'd went for them. I'll take St Mirren to beat Aberdeen.
No fancy St Johnston, mate, no?
Mate, I'm not. I never bet on St Johnston.
I never bet on Hibs, to be fair, but I can't. Hibs, I'd imagine Hibs should pick up a win. Like.
I do fancy St Johnston against Livingston.
Yeah.
But I'd rather bet on another team, and then at least it doesn't come in. It's not a double whammy, is it?
Exactly, aye. So.
Right, guys, we'll get performance of the week done, and then that'll be an end to the pod for this week. Shan, I'll come to you first. Who is your performance of the week?
I'm going to go for Leon Bailey for Aston Villa. I mean, if anybody has seen even Match of the Day, which was the brief highlights of Aston Villa versus Nottingham Forest, he's just came on absolute leaps and bounds since last season. He always had a trick in him, but I feel like he wasn't quite given that final pass or that effort on goal that was doing any real damage. But this season he's been electric, and I thought his performance on Saturday against Forest was just phenomenal. Setting up Watkins for his goal and getting his own, well deserved.
That it is. Marty, who are you going for?
My performance of the week is Kevin Clancy, top class refereeing performance. No, I'm only joking. It's quite difficult to pick one this week. It's too easy to pick Haaland for scoring 5 goals. Mm. But judging by the highlights I've seen this week, I'm going to give my performance of the week to St Johnston. Because I didn't expect them to go to Aberdeen and win. And judging by the highlights, they played really well and took their chances. So, and big 3 points for them. So, my performance of the week is St Johnston. You're welcome, Michael.
Who scored for them, Mike?
Nicky Clark scored a penalty. Mm. And Benji scored the other one. I'm not going to try and pronounce his name, mate.
Oh, Kim
Pioca.
Yeah.
That's the one, Marty. Cheers. Yeah, I mean, he's looking decent. He's getting up to the pace of the game. And talking about pace, he has got some amount of pace in him. We just need to utilise it more often. He scored against Ross County with a similar sort of goal where he gets put through a goal and the defenders really kind of catch him, and he's managed to slot a couple in past. So he's looking good. So yeah, I think my performance of the week is going to go to Jared Bowen for his hat-trick against Brentford. I think West Ham, especially David Moyes, been under some amount of pressure recently with their recent form. But I still think for West Ham, who were last season just above the relegation points, they didn't really stay safe until maybe 4 or 5 weeks before the end of the season. So I think the fact that they are just outside European places just now, sat in eighth place, there's been a bit of an overreaction to their slump in form. Every team goes through it, but I think for Bowen to get a hat-trick and get West Ham bouncing back in the right direction, some quality goals as well. So, yeah, I'd go Jared Bowen.
Yep.
Right, boys, I think that's us for this week. A bit of a longer pod this week for a change, which was nice. And thanks very much for your time, and I'll catch you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Take care, boys. Bye. Bye.